Welcome back, Hemingway listeners, to the Hemingway Listen-a-thon. We're talking about Anna Karenina, Chapter 7, Part 9. Charlotte said, wow. Oh, wait a minute. Let me talk about the discussion prompts first. Discussion prompt number 1. The spell of the club faded pretty quickly. Discussion prompt number 2. Levin's thoughts on the Anna portrait. What are your thoughts? Charlotte said, well, the spell sure did fade quickly, and I'm not sure if I trust Levin's judgment that he isn't tipsy. Levin's reaction to Anna and the portrait surprised me. I didn't remember Anna being so beautiful. Was that mentioned before? It kind of was. It's always, every time they mention how beautiful she is, then it's immediately kind of undermined by something, sort of. Like in the example of the previous chapter where she's so beautiful in the portrait and they've captured her beauty but exaggerated it to make her more beautiful than she could be in real life. So it's like, it's kind of a compliment of her beauty, but then there's always like this little pullback at the end of the compliment. And I think there's been a few cases like that. I can't really recall what they said, but it was like things like, you know, she was beautiful even though she, whatever, like, I can't remember, but then it would like kind of downplay it a bit. JMama8779 said, good call, maybe he's had a few drinks. I think it's been implied the whole time that she's a pretty lady. It's never been outright stated, though, I don't think. I Am Norwegian said, Steva makes a sarcastic comment about the stupidity of going round singing Rejoice Isaiah. Some months ago I stumbled upon this choral music called Village Wedding. I had no idea the lyrics were grounded in Orthodox tradition. It's a beautiful song. I don't know what the style is, but it's almost hypnotizing. Anna had a period where her beauty faded a bit during pregnancy, and the worst of the emotional toil with her husband and later Vronsky. Now it's back in full force, though, which Levin couldn't help but notice. Miniel said, phew, I was like 50 chapters behind, but I finally managed to catch up, so I'm here again. Welcome back, Miniel. Good job on the catch up, on the little marathon there. Miniel says, oh no, Levin, just keep your eyes on Kitty, please. Levin, is Levin really gonna, at this late point of the novel, we can't have another adultery case, can we? Another act of, what am I trying to say? What's it called when you cheat? Disloyalty? You know what I'm trying to say. Not now, surely not. That would be pretty funny though. Who's Levin to Anna? Kitty to Anna. Is Kitty, Oblonsky's wife's sister's sister? Yeah. Oh man, I'm confused. Chapter 10. She had risen to greet him, not concealing her pleasure at seeing him. The tranquility with which she extended to him her energetic little hand introduced him to Vorkuyev, and indicated a pretty red-haired child who sat in the same room doing needlework, spoke of her as a ward, showed the manners, familiar and pleasant to Levin, of a woman of good society, always self-possessed and natural. I am very, very pleased, she repeated, and from her lips these simple words seemed to Levin to possess a peculiar meaning. I have known and liked you both for your friendship to Steva and for your wife's sake. I only knew her for a very short time, but she left on me the impression of a lovely flower, just a flower, and she will soon be a mother. She spoke easily and without haste, occasionally turning her eyes from Levin to her brother. Levin felt that the impression he was creating was a good one and immediately became at ease and as natural and comfortable with her as if he had known her from childhood. We came into Alex's room to have a smoke, she said in reply to Oblinsky's question whether he might smoke, and glancing at Levin, instead of asking him whether he smoked, She drew a tortoise-shell cigar case nearer and took from it a straw cigarette. "How are you today?" asked her brother. "Pretty well. Nerves as usual." "Isn't it wonderfully good?" said Oblonsky, noticing that Levin kept looking at the portrait. "I have never seen a better portrait." "And it's a wonderful likeness, isn't it?" asked Vorkuyev. Levin glanced from the portrait to the original. A special brightness lit up Anna's face when she felt his eyes on her. Levin flushed and to hide his confusion, was about to ask her if it was long since she had seen Dolly, but at that instant, Anna herself began to speak. "We were just talking with Ivan Petrovich Vorkuyev about Vashenko's last pictures. Have you seen them?" "Yes, I have," replied Levin. "But excuse me, I interrupted you. You were going to say..." Levin asked whether she had seen Dolly lately. "She was here yesterday. She is very angry with the high school because of Grisha. The Latin master, it seems, has been unjust to him." "Yes, I have seen the pictures and did not like them very much," Levin stated, returning to the subject he had started. Levin did not now speak at all in the matter-of-fact way in which he had talked that morning. Every word of his conversation with her assumed a special importance. It was pleasant to speak to her, and yet more pleasant to listen to her. Anna not only talked naturally and cleverly, but cleverly and carelessly, not attributing any value to her own ideas, but attributing great value to those of her interlocutor. The conversation touched on the new direction taken by art and the new illustrations of the Bible by a French artist. Vorkuyev accused the artist of realism, pushed to coarseness. Levin said that French had carried conventionality in art further than anyone else, and therefore attributed special merit to the return to realism. In the fact that they had left off lying, they perceived poetry. Never had any clever thought uttered by Levin given him so much satisfaction as this. Anna's face brightened all over when she suddenly appreciated the remark. She laughed. "I am laughing as one laughs on seeing a very striking likeness. What you have said is quite characterizes present-day French art, painting, and even literature. Zola, Daudet. But perhaps it is always like that. They form their conceptions from imaginary conventional figures, and when they have made every possible combination of these, they tire of the conventional figures and begin to devise more natural and correct ones." "Yes, that's it exactly," said Vorkuyev. "So, you have been to the club," she said, addressing her brother. "What a woman," thought Levin, and quite forgetting himself, he gazed fixedly at her beautiful mobile face, which had now suddenly quite changed. Levin did not hear what she was speaking about while she leaned toward her brother, but was struck by the change in her expression. After being so lovely in its tranquility, her face suddenly expressed a strange curiosity, anger, and pride. But this lasted only a moment. She screwed up her eyes as if she were remembering something. "However, that won't interest anyone," she said, and turning to the little English girl, she added in English, "Please order tea in the drawing room." The child rose and went out. "Well, has she passed her examination?" inquired Oblonsky. "Splendidly. She is very capable and has a sweet nature." "You'll finish by being fonder of her than of your own." "How like a man. There is no more or less in love. I love my children with one kind of love and her with another." "I was just saying to Anna Arkadyevna," remarked Vorkuyev, "that if she were to devote to the general business of educating Russian children 1/100th part of the energy she bestows on this English child, she would be doing a great and useful work." "Yes, but say what you like, I can't do it. Count Alexis urged me very much." As she spoke the words Count Alexis, she turned a timidly petitioning glance toward Levin, and he involuntarily replied with a respectful and confirmatory glance. "He urged me to take an interest in the village school. I went several times. They were very nice children. But I could not attach myself to the work. You mention energy. Energy is based on love, and where is one to get the love? One can't order it. I've become fond of this girl, you see, without knowing why." Again she glanced at Levin, and her smile and glance told him that she was speaking for him alone, valuing his opinion and knowing in advance that they would understand one another. Yes, I quite understand, Levin replied. It is impossible to put one's heart into a school or an institution of that kind and think that it is just philanthropic establishments always give such poor results. After a pause, she smiled and said, yes, yes, I never could do it. Je n'ai pas le cœur assez large. My heart is not big enough. To love a whole orphanage full of unpleasant little girls. Cela ne m'a la joie jamais réussi. I never could succeed with that. There are so many women who have created for themselves a social position in that way, and now especially. She went on with a sad, confiding expression, as though addressing her brother, but evidently speaking to Levin. Now, when I so need some occupation, I can't do it. And with a sudden frown, Levin understood that she was frowning at herself for having spoken about herself. She changed the subject. I have heard it said of you, she said to Levin, that you are a bad citizen, and I have defended you as best I could. How did you defend me? That varied with the attacks. However, won't you come and have some tea? She rose and took up a book bound in Morocco leather. Let me have it, Anna Arkadyevna, said Vorokyev, pointing to the book. It is well worth it. Oh no, it is so unfinished. I have told him about it, remarked Oblonsky to his sister, indicating Levin. You should not have done so. My writings are something like those little baskets and carvings made in prisons, which Lisa Merkolova used to sell to me. She used to preside over the prison department of a society, she added, turning to Levin, and those unfortunate people achieved miracles of patience. And Levin perceived yet another feature in this woman whom he already liked so much. In addition to her intelligence, grace, and beauty, she also possessed sincerity. She did not wish to hide from him the hardships of her position. When she had finished speaking, she sighed, and all at once her face assumed a stern expression and became rigid. With that expression, her face seemed even more beautiful than before, but it was a novel look. It was outside the circle of expressions, radiating happiness and creating happiness, which the artist had caught when painting her portrait. Levin again looked at the portrait and at her figure, as, arm in arm with her brother, she passed through the lofty doorway, and he felt a tenderness and pity for her which surprised him. She asked Levin and Vorokyev to pass on into the drawing room, and herself remained behind to speak to her brother. About the divorce, about Vronsky, about what he was doing at the club, about me, Levin wondered, and he was so excited about what she might be saying to Oblonsky that he hardly listened to what Vorokyev was telling him about the merits of Anna's story for children. Over their tea, they continued the same kind of pleasant and interesting talk. There was not a single moment when it was necessary to seek for a subject of conversation. On the contrary, one felt that there was not time enough to say what one wanted to say, but willingly refrained in order to hear what she was saying. It seemed to Levin that all that was said, not only by her, but also by Vorokyev and Oblonsky, assumed a special importance owing to her attention and remarks. While following this interesting conversation, Levin all the time continued to admire her, her beauty, her cleverness, her good education, together with her simplicity and sincerity. He listened and talked, and all the time thought of her inner life, trying to guess her feelings, and he, who had formerly judged her so severely, now by some strange process of reasoning, justified her, and at the same time pitied her, and feared that Vronsky did not fully understand her. Toward 11, when Oblonsky rose to leave, Vorokyev had already gone. Levin felt as if he had only just arrived. He got up regretfully. Goodbye, she said, retaining his hand and gazing at him with a look that drew him to her. I am very pleased, que la glace est rompue, that the ice has broken. She let go his hand and screwed up her eyes. Tell your wife that I am just as fond of her as ever, and that if she cannot forgive me my situation, I wish her never to forgive me. To forgive, she would have to live through what I have lived through, and may God preserve her from that. Certainly, yes, I will tell her, said Levin, blushing. Levin. All right, there we go. Another chapter down, 11. 11, 11, 11, 11, 11. You little sleaze. Sleaze, Levin. Have your say about Levin and Anna over at the subreddit. Thanks very much for listening. See you tomorrow.